You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wait a minute. This isn't Maggie Dawn music, and this isn't Maggie Dawn. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's off today. I'm Pat Kreitler from Up North News. Happy to be joining you on this Monday afternoon, April 14th. You can join me most weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m. on Up North News Radio, and you can catch what we do every day at upnorthnewswi.com. You can also sign up for our daily newsletter there, which today is all about 414 Day on this April 14th. So happy 414 Day to everybody in the old area code. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to have a guest talking about the movie Hundreds of Beavers. It's a silent movie, kind of a goofball movie, and named one of the best independent films of 2024 by the LA Times. It is the movie trailer that I didn't know that I needed to see until today. And you'll feel the same way in just a little bit when we talk to our guests from there. But first, let's talk about tax policy for a moment. I want to take you down memory lane. Remember that phrase, redistribution of wealth? Remember that? Remember how it was all about the middle class was having money sucked out of their pocket and given to undeserving and lazy poor people? And it was never about that. It was a great cover for something that is so much more obvious now than it has ever been in terms of money being sucked out of the middle class and redistributed, but redistributed upward. We saw that in the 2017 Trump tax bill when it blew a massive hole in the deficit but made millionaires and billionaires very happy. It's got to be replaced with something because it's expiring, and so something has to be done with tax policy. So they wouldn't do something as reckless fiscally again, would they? Yeah, they would. And that's what Bobby Kogan is here to talk about from the Center for American Progress, Senior Director of Federal Budget Policy. Bobby, thank you for being here. How are you?
Pat, thanks so much for having me on. I'm okay. There's a lot bad going on in the world right now. Today was a bad day. It's been a bad week. It's only Monday. It was a bad week so far. It was a bad week last week. But, I'm doing what I can.
That is... We joke about it on our morning show is the question, how are you doing? It's so different than the way it ever was before. And so we're trying to look for like the right answer of, all things considered or something like that. We're doing all right, but I'm glad you're here and I'm glad that you're continuing to keep people informed as the Center for American Promise has done so much and so well. And so I wanted to find out a bit more about what's being proposed by Congress. And I guess we better divide it up first, because when we say something's going to be passed by Congress, it's still kind of hard to know because where House Republicans are and where Senate Republicans are, I mean, neither one of them is in a great place, but last I checked, they are still nowhere near agreement on what ultimately they want to do, right?
Yeah, that's right. So they're doing what's called a reconciliation bill. You don't need to know that it's called reconciliation. What matters is that they can do this even if 100% of Democrats vote no. They can do it with a simple majority. And as you say, they have big disagreement. But the one thing they definitely agree on is that they want to do a giant tax cut that disproportionately helps the rich. And they both want to do giant cuts to food assistance. And they both want to do at least some Medicaid cuts. They kind of differ on the degree of Medicaid cuts, but there's big agreement, huge cuts, tax cuts for the rich, taking away food assistance from the poor, and taking away some health insurance from the needy.
And yet there is still this, I don't know how to describe this sense of denial that is out there. And last week, we played a clip from Congressman Derek Van Orden of Western and Central Wisconsin screaming in the middle of a House Agriculture Committee hearing about how Democrats were lying, as he put it, about all of these cuts. They kept saying we're going to cut Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security. And it's first off, he says it's a lie. And then he says benefits for people who should lawfully receive it won't be cut by a nickel because there's so much other waste, fraud, and abuse out there. So let's start first with the notion of when he says Democrats are lying, we have never had cuts like this. Bobby, tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me those cuts would have happened if they had been able to agree amongst themselves on it. But that's the whole reason we've had so many continuing resolutions, is that they don't actually have it in them to pass a budget yet that has these kind of massive cuts. They needed to wait until now for a reconciliation bill opportunity like this, right?
Yeah. So the U.S. is a bad and confusing budget process, but basically we fight about a third of the budget we fight about every year. That was what the continuing resolution is about. And this reconciliation process is about the other two thirds of the budget, not counting Social Security. So it's really about half of the budget and then taxes. And so I would just say, I mean, look, the representative is lying. The reason he can get around saying this right now is that what they've done so far is they are doing the first step, which is called a budget resolution. It's kind of a budget blueprint. And it instructs you, it says, hey, Agriculture Committee, find at least $230 billion of cuts. Hey, Energy and Commerce Committee, find at least $880 billion of cuts. And so he says, well, we're not cutting anything because we didn't say we're cutting SNAP. We just told the committee that oversees SNAP to find the cuts. We didn't say we're cutting Medicaid. We just told the committee that oversees Medicaid to find the cuts. And the numbers are so extreme that it necessitates it. So just as an example for food stamps, because he was talking about the Ag Committee, the Ag Committee has only a certain amount of spending in its jurisdiction. And they called for at least $230 billion of cuts. Well, the Ag Committee is just farm programs and SNAP. And so your options are, if you're trying to do 230, you could not touch SNAP and you could do a 75% cut to all farm programs, which they're not doing, or you could cut SNAP. And so that's what we know. We know they're doing it because they said they're doing it. They told the committee that oversees it to do the cuts. Same deal with Medicaid. It's actually not possible to not do Medicaid cuts if you are if you're exempting Medicare also. There's not enough money in the jurisdiction. So he's lying. The cuts, we will one day see text. The next step right now is Congress is in recess. They'll come back. They'll start writing legislative text. And at that point, we will see very clearly they're cutting SNAP and they're cutting Medicaid.
There was another comment from his tirade that said there is billions and billions and billions in waste, fraud, and abuse to cut, and that's why benefits won't be cut a nickel. And married with it were comments by House Speaker Mike Johnson a couple of days back that again brought out the old trope of, well, we're going to restore the dignity of work by getting all these people off their couches who are playing video games. I remember we heard this when Tim Michaels ran for governor 3 years ago. We heard it from Eric Hovde running against Tammy Baldwin, you know, a little over, you know, about 2 years ago. And I guess it never gets old. It's like Ronald Reagan's welfare queen, that you can keep using that to justify billions in fraud, waste, and abuse. But I still haven't seen a real plan that says if there's all this fraud going on, I mean, shouldn't all these people be like in court being charged with fraud or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. And the thing is, they can say this now because there isn't legislative text, but we will see legislative text soon. And SNAP is actually a really great example. They've actually said exactly what they want to do. In the Biden administration, Biden did a reevaluation of the inflation metric that they use to figure out how much SNAP you get. And Biden kind of unilaterally upped benefits around 20-ish%. And they say they want to undo that. That's not waste, fraud, and abuse. That's not the wrong people getting the benefits or anything like that. They have been very clear. They just want to cut benefits down from a meager, it's slightly more than $2 per person per meal right now. They want to cut it down to $1.67 per person per meal. That's not waste, fraud, and abuse. That's not the wrong people getting it. They just want to take away people's food assistance.
And I think what makes it so disingenuous coming from Congressman Van Orden was his justification at the front end was to say that he grew up in a low-income family with a single mom. He said, you know, we ate government cheese, in that sneering way that people will say those things. And I reminded the congressman on air that, well, I'm the same. grew up with a single mom, grew up, you know, going to the local welfare office to get our book of food stamps to go to the grocery store and always wondering about the looks that you're getting from others. But just because you grew up poor does not make you an expert on what constitutes waste, fraud, and abuse now that you're not so poor anymore. And it just seems to me that for a guy who says he's looking out for, you know, the next round of you know, young boys and girls from starving families, he certainly seems to be punishing those same children that he claims that he's going to be helping by identifying waste, fraud, and abuse. I just don't think he can have it both ways.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's cover because I don't know. They don't want to admit that what they're actually doing is taking assistance away, you know, taking food assistance away from folks and taking, you know, health insurance away from folks. They don't want to admit it. So they're just pretending it's all waste. But again, when we look at the actual things that they have said they're going to do, and when we get the actual text in a couple of weeks, it will be very clear. And I'm sure they'll continue the same line. I'm sure they'll continue saying this is just waste, fraud, and abuse, but it's a lie. It's the same way, you know, eight years ago in 2017, when they were trying to repeal huge parts of the ACA and it would have kicked millions of people off their health insurance, their response was, no, we're not. We're not doing that. But it was a lie. And it's the same when they were doing their tax bill 8 years ago as well. They said, well, we're not, tax revenue is going to go up. We're not reducing the deficit. And it was a lie. It is a lie. They're lying about their policies. And in this case, they're lying about policies that would harm, you know, like over a million Wisconsinites are on Medicaid. About 700,000-800,000 Wisconsinites are on food stamps, right? Like these are real people who are actually going to be really affected. And it's all in pursuit of some bill to like help cut taxes for the rich while blowing up the deficit by trillions of dollars.
And that's the thing, is that it is going to blow up the deficit. And yet they're trying to basically work some magic on the definitions of what a baseline is and all this inside baseball that we won't, you know, bore a lot of folks with. But they're working so hard to make something appear to be other than what it actually is. And we're going to continue that conversation with Bobby Kogan from the Center for American Progress in just a moment. We'll talk about the actual hit to the United States economy. If this tax package from 2017 were to be renewed just as is. That's all coming up. Brewers, again, they play the Detroit Tigers. They start a 3-game series at American Family Field. The coverage starts at 6:05 on stations across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow in Chippewa Falls. We'll continue the Maggie Dawn Show right after this.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Tomorrow morning on my program, Up North News Radio, I'll be joined at 7:30 by Sean O'Malley, a Hudson native, who went from Wisconsin to Wall Street, had a very handsome career in international financial compliance. Nobody is more aware of the rules of the road and how trade wars are impacting the economy of an entire nation, as well as back home in Wisconsin. So again, Sean O'Malley will join me tomorrow morning at 7:30 on Up North News Radio. I really have to tip my cap to Molly Beck. I mentioned earlier her story in the Journal Sentinel today about Republican businessman Bill Berrien forming a PAC ahead of a likely campaign for governor of Wisconsin next year. Molly then appends her tweet with one that says, "Yes, the last Wisconsin election took place 13 days ago. And yet here we are talking about the next one." I think I said in the last segment something about Eric Hovde running against Tammy Baldwin. I think I said a year or so ago. It was 5 months. That's how quickly we just go right to the next cycle with the Supreme Court, and it just goes on and on. But we have to pay attention to every one of these things, every one of them, because the moment you take your eye off the ball, is when you see something like what we're talking about here with Bobby Kogan from the Center for American Progress talking all about the 2017 Trump tax bill, which again, for folks that missed it earlier, I never refer to it as the Trump tax cuts because it cut the least amount possible for the middle class to be technically called a tax cut, unless you were a millionaire or billionaire, of course. But, you know, the bill's got to be replaced with something, and that something could be not just bad for, you know, a few people, but for the economy writ large. And that's something that Bobby's got an article about over at the website about what this would do to, you know, the whole average income of American families. Can you talk a bit more about the fiscal impact at the household level as well as the nation's economy if these tax cuts and tax breaks were to be extended as they were in 2017?
Sure. So as you correctly said, Pat, the 2017 tax law disproportionately gave money to the rich, right? So people in the top 0.1% got about $250,000 tax break. 28 million Americans in the bottom 80% didn't get a tax break at all. 14 million households saw their taxes go up. And there was, on average, a small amount for the average American, on average. But what's really interesting is that the Congressional Budget Office, which kind of does economic and budget analysis for Congress, looked at what would happen if you continued this, if you extended this tax bill, you made it permanent. And they said that it would harm the economy. They said it would push up interest rates and it would lower American wages. And the really crazy thing is that they said that it would lower Americans' wages so much that on average, it would actually, the average person would be worse off, not better off over the long run. That, yeah, you get a small tax cut, but your wage growth would be lower. And so over time, you're actually going to come out behind, not ahead.
So
not the rich people, it's, you know, for the rest of us.
So I can understand if folks would say, well, okay, that's what happens if you just renew it as it is. What about if you just let it expire and do nothing at all? And it was my understanding, though I don't know if I'm right or wrong on this, but that you have to do something here with the expiration of the 2017 Act, because if you don't do anything, it also would not necessarily be good for middle class taxes. And so here is this opportunity to do something new with the tax code. But unfortunately, Donald Trump and his minions are the ones in charge. But something has to be done with tax law, correct?
If you do nothing, you go back to the Obama era tax code for the most part, right? And I would say there were some improvements and a lot of things that were way worse in the 2017 tax law. And so, the best approach would be something that tries to take some of the good stuff and then raise taxes on the rich to kind of pay for anything that you're continuing. That's not really what Republicans are doing. I mean, they're kind of looking at having it all blow up or doing a really bad version. And what's really wild, you know, what we've seen is that it's actually better for the average person, better for for people on average, you and me, not the super duper rich, but better for you and me and most of everyone else on average to let them all expire. As I say, an ideal one, you might keep they boosted the child tax credit. You might kind of keep some of that sort of things. There were some things that were done on the international scale that you might keep. You don't have to do it, but as you say, it's maybe not super smart to just let it all go cold turkey. You'd probably pick the things you like and let other things expire.
We're talking to Bobby Kogan from the Center for American Progress. He served in the Biden-Harris White House as an advisor to the director of the Office of Management and Budget, and also served as Democratic staff for the Senate Committee on the Budget as chief mathematician and head of budget analysis. And I guess we'll close with this point. We've talked a lot about, you know, the effect on the economy, on income, but even the cost of, say, consumer borrowing, credit cards, car loans, student loans, mortgages, things like that, that too, I mean, it's basically almost every facet of life faces a negative impact if what Republicans are proposing now gets passed, right?
Yeah, quite literally, if they do what they're trying to do, it pushes up the cost of any new auto loans, any new mortgages, student loans, credit card rates, that sort of stuff. It pushes up all that. It lowers your income. And that's before you take into account what tariffs are doing, right? So already you're worse off just kind of continuing it. And then you lose $4,000 from the tariffs. And what you see is something that helps the very richest and hurts everyone else and then takes away SNAP and Medicaid from the poorest Americans, right? Like, absolutely detrimental package that would harm America.
And if you missed it earlier, 1.2 million people in Wisconsin rely on Medicaid. That's 18% of the state population. And in 2024, roughly 1 in 8 people in Wisconsin were enrolled in SNAP. And that's where, again, for Republican politicians saying, you know, the waste, fraud, and abuse is elsewhere. It's those people in, point to any other part of the state. You know, they're the ones that deserve to have their things cut. What people really should be taking away from this is, they are the waste and fraud that politicians want to cut. There's no way to avoid that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, they're starting to get clever about it. They say, oh, well, we'll just give the state less money to account for the waste or whatever. But what that really means is just giving the state less money to run the program, right? Like, it really literally means kicking people off of their Medicaid, or in the case of SNAP, where they're even more direct, they're just saying any money we give to you is waste, right? They just say we should just give you less.
I love Bobby Zhao because it is essentially the guy at the end of Scooby-Doo who pulls the mask off the villain and tells you who he was all along. It was old man Trump all along. We knew it was. We just had to cut through all of the blather and the math. Bobby, thank you so much. Appreciate what you're doing at Center for American Progress. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
All right. We'll be back with more of the Maggie Don Show after this. I'm Pat Kreitlow here in Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Maggie Don Show. I'm Pat Kreitlow, pinch hitting for Maggie Don. Hopefully feels better and is back tomorrow. If so, I think I know some of the things she'll be talking about. For example, President Trump had an Oval Office event just a little while ago with the president of El Salvador, and not only said that he'd be willing to deport American citizens, and yes, I said that right, deport American citizens, but the White House once again barred the Associated Press from covering the Oval Office event, even though a court of law, said that he had to. I'm sure Maggie will have some things to say about Trump and the rule of law and his threat to again shut down 60 Minutes because he doesn't like their reporting next time that Maggie joins you here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Who's ready for a palate cleanser? What say we talk about movies? Specifically, a movie about beavers. Hundreds of Beavers. That's the name of the movie. Hundreds of Beavers, named the number 4 best indie film of 2024 by the LA Times. Hundreds of Beavers was filmed during COVID up in the Wisconsin North Woods. No dialogue, shot in black and white on a shoestring budget, and it did not go right to streaming. It had some very nice showings, including one recently in Milwaukee, where it was screened on 35mm film, bringing analog charm with all of its grainy imperfections. And so joining us today is one of the producers of Hundreds of Beavers, Kurt Ravenwood. Kurt, thank you for being here. Nice to see you.
Hey, good to be here. Nice to see you too.
Look, I never thought in all my years of doing radio that I would be talking about a silent film. And yet here I am with no dialogue and a lot of beavers. And it was the movie trailer I didn't know I needed to see until I saw it. And that's where I'm going to leave it. You're one of the people that did all the, you know, that has done the work to have this movie done and to promote it. And so you far better than me can describe if we go see Hundreds of Beavers in a theater or streaming, what are we going to see?
Well, you're going to see physical slapstick comedy like you haven't seen since the early days. And I think the kind of comedy that we really haven't seen on screen since the Zucker Brothers, other, you know, Wisconsin filmmakers, did movies like Airplane and Naked Gun. The director, Mike Cheslick, who's from Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin, and then the actor and co-writer, Ryland Tews, just really have a big nostalgia for this kind of cinema. Three Stooges, Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton. But they're also inspired equally by things like video games and Charlie Chan. So, like, there's all kinds of great influences wrapped up in Hundreds of Beavers. It's not really a truly throwback movie, even though it uses the aesthetics of black and white and silent comedy. But when you watch the film, you'll find that we have a few tricks up our sleeves that bring it to modern audiences.
Yeah, very much so. Because again, if you were to just see little tiny snippets, you'd say, oh, this is one of those slapstick films from the, you know, the 20s, 30s, whatever the case may be. And then you see some of the effects that are brought into play and you go, oh, no, we're marrying, you know, we're in a time warp here. We're taking something that maybe Buster Keaton would have been the lumberjack, and instead we're making it for a modern era. Now, the synopsis reads, in this 19th century supernatural winter epic, a drunken Applejack salesman must go from zero to hero and become North America's greatest fur trapper by defeating hundreds of beavers. I hope that's not too much of a spoiler alert.
That about sums it up. You know, man versus beaver, man versus nature, man gets girl. It's really a simple story that everyone can relate to. And the fact that it has no dialogue means it translates well overseas. Hundreds of Beavers has played in hundreds of countries around the world in the last few years, and we've been really excited to see how it's rolled out.
And so that rollout did include a Milwaukee showing. So talk. Can you tell us a bit about that? You know, again, what was it about the Milwaukee ad agency that had some ideas to, you know, expose people to it in a way that isn't just, you know, go watch it on your tablet?
Totally. So I'm going to have to educate a little bit on how the movie industry works in order to fully tell this story. Sure. So when you make a movie as an independent producer, you are making a movie that is not in the Hollywood system, meaning it does not have distribution. Now, how it used to work is you would bring your film to a film festival like Sundance or South by Southwest and hope that one of these Hollywood people would see your movie, love it so much, buy it, and get it out to the masses. Now, unfortunately, that did not happen for us. While we did play in some really great film festivals, including the Milwaukee Film Festival in 2023, we had no distribution offers whatsoever. We were told it's black and white. There's no stars in it. It's not based on anything that anyone knows. How are we ever going to market this movie? And so, I'm a producer, but for my day job, I produce commercials. I'm in advertising, and I have an advertising agency here in Milwaukee in Walker's Point called SRH. So when we hit a wall with distribution, we had the idea of, well, let's just do this ourselves. We're marketers. We know how to get butts in seats. We know how to market things. Perhaps we can market a movie. And so in 2024, in the very beginning of 2024, we spent 2 weeks driving a van around the Midwest from Minneapolis all the way to Toronto, screening the movie and one night only screenings all the way. And that 2 week roadshow actually caught the attention of a lot of the industry press. So we got a full feature in the New York Times art section, the LA Times covered it, Variety covered it. All of these major Hollywood players were wondering, hey, how is this movie gaining an audience without a distributor? How is this happening? And the truth is, we just knew we had a movie that people loved and had a lot of fun with. And if we could get a theater owner to agree to put the movie on screens, we could pack the house. So that was 2 weeks of showing up in person, doing some antics. You know, our movie features animals that are actually people in mascot costumes. So there was some obvious marketing tie in there. We would wrestle beavers in the audience during the Q&A. And that just generated more and more attention so that we were able to have a big New York premiere, a big Los Angeles premiere. And that just continued to snowball, pun intended, until the movie has shown in well over 300 theaters across the United States over the last year and a half. And we've made nearly $1.5 million at the box office, and we're still going. There are still screenings that pop up every week all around the country.
I mean, this is a little guy, small business, you know, success story of we're so used to everything is locked into, you know, what the corporate way is. And you've got to be in this mainstream lane. And if you're not currying favor, you know, you're never going to be out there. And this is a reminder that, you know, through the internet and guerrilla marketing and everything else, if you're willing to do the work, you can still get the attention, even if you don't start with, you know, all the bells and whistles that other people might have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we had the right movie at the right time. I will guarantee all of your listeners that Hundreds of Beavers has more laughs per minute than any other film you can find. If you do not feel that way after you watch it, you can have your money back. Just email me. it's a funny movie, and people had not been coming to theaters to get together and laugh their butts off with a room full of strangers in years. I mean, can you remember the last time you were in a movie theater with a crowd and everyone was screaming laughing?
No.
Yeah, right? So that's what, so at the end of the day too, I think Mike and Ryland made such a funny movie that people found, I think, uniquely healing in a way in the kind of crazy times that we live in. And now the coolest thing is it's just developed its own cult following. If you follow us on Hundreds of Beavers social, which is on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on Blue Sky, we're on everything we can be, you'll see that people around the world have Hundreds of Beavers tattoos. People are making Hundreds of Beavers merch. People, I just got in touch with a guy today who has a licensing agreement with Lego, and he's going to make Hundreds of Beavers Legos. The thing is just really taken on off on its own. But it all started with, you know, a couple guys in a van just roadshowing it around the Midwest.
Oh, my goodness. And the roadshows clearly paid off. As I was looking at the trailer, there are a lot of film festival marks here, including one from Atlanta, Kansas City, Phoenix. This is getting attention. It's building.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And our festival, it's kind of confusing to follow. Like our festival run, we were able to play in all those film festivals well before our roadshow. Mm-hmm. And that's what showed us that we had a good movie, right? Like all these festivals were taking the movie in, and we would go and visit them, and we would watch with the audiences. And we just saw, like, wow, we know we have a good movie. Why isn't Hollywood paying attention? Why aren't they jumping on board this, right? Like movie theaters are struggling. Movies are bombing. This is the kind of thing maybe people want to see. And that's why, you know, we had the guts to then take it out on our own. But the coolest thing about it is, you know, other than that first 2-week roadshow, we haven't had to show up in person to a single screening. The movie's just kind of carried on a life of its own. And we get frequent requests from people all over the country to play it again in their city.
It is. You might have a better example than mine, but I can just say that at the time when my daughters were teenagers, for them, it was Napoleon Dynamite was this film that I saw the first time. Sherry and I looked at it and were like, what the hell are our daughters watching? And then, we watched it a second time. And, of course, by the third time, we're quoting the lines. And that, we're probably quoting the lines more than our kids now are at this point because they're adults. And it goes, you never know where that next thing is going to hit, where it's going to connect with folks. Clearly, you're making a connection here somewhat in that vein.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Napoleon Dynamite's a great film. I grew up with that film. The director's having a very good couple of weeks because he directed the Minecraft movie, which is doing very good business, if you haven't heard.
I had no idea. I took my 11-year-old grandson last week. Been talking about that. In fact, I mentioned this morning, I'm sure the 11-year-old's not listening, so spoiler alert, his Easter basket gift includes a T-shirt about Steve's lava chicken from the Minecraft movie because he can't stop singing the song. So again, you just don't know what's going to catch with folks. And, you know, you work at it and people notice and there it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you say chicken jockey to a Gen Z kid right now, they will scream and throw popcorn at you. And you know what? Like, look, I'm going to be honest. I did not understand that movie. I did not like it at all.
Nope.
But I really find it encouraging to see kids coming back into the movie theaters. I think movie theaters have just really, really struggled since COVID. And I understand that you can watch almost any movie at home. And I also understand it's very expensive to get to the movie theater. So I think it's on us as movie producers to actually put on a show, to make it an event and to make it a fun time because people are spending a lot of money to do it.
And frankly, again, not to get political, there's always room for comedy. But as somebody who, you know, I grew up with slapstick. I love slapstick. My wife often says that she doesn't, but then I'll catch her chuckling with, you know, something that I'm watching. And I'm sorry. I mean, yeah, I chuckle at all of the Avengers movies, but that ain't a slapstick movie. We need a little bit more of that in our lives these days.
Yeah, I want the healing power of a belly laugh, you know, like a belly, like a deep belly laughing. And yeah, you don't get that with the kind of clever humor, I think, even from like movies like Deadpool and Wolverine. They're popular, they're funny, but a lot of their humor comes from irony and like self-referential stuff. And I think we're just done with that. And I think it's time to kind of go back to our roots in comedy. And all the movies we're going to work on next are all going to be in that same vein.
Let's talk about how people can see it and who should see it. First off, where would you put it in, you know, is it more of a PG-13 or how would you rate that for parents who are listening going, is this something I want to watch with my kid who is this age?
That's a great question because we couldn't afford to have the Hollywood system give it a rating. It's cost a lot of money to submit for that. I would call it a PG-11 or a PG-12. So it's right around there. There is a lot of animal violence, but it's all done on mascots. Keep an eye out for that. Depends on your comfort level. But really, if you let your kids watch Looney Tunes, if you would let your kids watch
That's
Looney
what
Tunes,
I was gonna
you, can
say.
Let, yep. you can let them watch Hundreds of Beavers. It's right in that same vein.
And honestly, I think we might be better off if more kids were watching Looney Tunes instead of some of what they're seeing out there these days. So you've had the showings, but obviously, you know, streaming is the big option as well. So there are plenty of streaming options for Hundreds of Beavers too?
Plenty of streaming options. So if you have a little bit of cash you want to throw our way, the way we make the most money is if you buy or rent it digitally on Amazon or iTunes. However, you know, we know it's tough times, so we wanted to make it widely available for free. So it is on YouTube with ads. Don't love it, but you can watch it for free and Tubi and a bunch of other streaming services. So if you just Google it and follow us on social, you can also keep track of when we do actual theatrical screenings, which we've done a number of and we will continue to as long as we can.
That sounds great. Kurt Ravenwood, producer for Hundreds of Beavers. This was such a thrill getting to hear more about this. Can't wait to catch it all. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thanks so much, Pat. Have a great one.
All right. You as well. We'll be back to wrap things up here on the Maggie Dawn Show after this. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Well, Calvin knows me as well as anybody, sitting on the board there, spinning all these Doobie Brothers tunes and Kenny Loggins and all other things yacht rock that we play all summer long on Up North News Radio. And earlier he played What a Fool Believes, and we actually have a daily history lesson every morning at 6:50, where we go over historical notes, music history, things like that. And this morning's edition included that song because it was on this day in 1979 that What a Fool Believes became the Doobie Brothers' second number one hit. The only other number one hit they had was Blackwater from 1974. And that was it. That's the roster of number one hits for the Doobies, despite everything else that they've done to climb the charts and Michael McDonald being seen as a yacht rock god and all of that. That was one of their number one songs. This very week, I can't believe I'm saying this, 46 years ago, we also marked David Letterman turning 78 over the weekend, Al Green turning 79. And that 50 years ago today, the number one song was by Elton John with Philadelphia Freedom. This week in 1975. I'm Pat Kreitlow, filling in for Maggie Dawn today, and hopefully we'll have her back tomorrow and back up and talking about all the issues of the day, same as what we do over at Up North News, which you can find at upnorthnewswi.com. And you can sign up for our daily newsletter there. We also have a weekend newsletter that we put together. And, of course, with the radio show, along with Mr. Greg Bach, we get plenty of texts. And we get notes on YouTube, like right now on YouTube. Chris is saying how much he loves some yacht rock. Michael was noticing Kenny Loggins there as well. And so, Calvin, please write down someplace where Maggie will see it. My apologies if she happens to say, what the heck happened here? What's with all this bumper music by artists from the 1970s? It just comes with the territory, I'm sorry to say. I mentioned President Trump and the Oval Office visit that he had earlier today, and it is true what I told you when he talked about deporting U.S. citizens, that that's what he would like to do. He said, quote, I'd like to go a step further. I said to Pam Bondi, the Attorney General of the United States, I don't know what the laws are. We have to obey the laws, but we also have homegrown criminals that push people into subways. I'd like to include them in the group to get out of the country. I think one of the tweets immediately below that says it all. Quote, we always have to obey the laws, says the convicted felon. And that's the punchline right there, is that we have a convicted criminal serving as president of the United States who is deporting American citizens or would like to deport American citizens, is deporting people who have been here legally, have been in the process of applying to be here legally or for citizenship. But again, by this continued demonization of people who don't match his skin color or background or political outlook, they become easy pickings to begin disappearing them. And now he says he'd be all about that for citizens as well. If so, what about people who would rise up in insurrection against the United States of America? Because if you set that precedent now, and then there's a new president, you know, January 20th of 2029, could it be that the people who raided the Capitol in a deadly assault may have killed members of Congress and the vice president if they could have, that they could then be swooped up off the streets and deported years after the crimes that they committed? It's really, it gets me the way that folks are willing to open the door as if the door will never swing both ways. And that what happens, what they love doing to others could happen to them. And I totally get why, because you had, for example, President Obama come into office, and one of the first things he did was he tamped down any expectation that anybody was going to face, you know, something related to war crimes or any kind of consequences for starting the war with Iraq. You had Gerald Ford, of course, pardoning Richard Nixon. We are used to this double standard now where we don't hold the highest politicians to account for their misdeeds, perhaps by and large because those criminal misdeeds have only been committed by one political party in this country to this point. But that may change. I mean, I know we're busy now with that whole flood the zone mentality that Steve Bannon talks about, that you know, Trump and his followers are putting stuff everywhere so that you don't know which one to follow next. Is it going to be this anti-trans bill? Is it going to be this anti-voting rights thing? Is it tariffs are in, tariffs are out? Don't know what to follow next. I get that. But I do hope that there are people with some legal training who have already started the ball rolling on collecting the crimes that are taking place that are going to have to be prosecuted, hopefully as early as January 20th, 2029. Now, the one thing I have been wrong most about in my life was predicting that not long after Trump left office in January of 2021, that he would face legal accountability for the things that he did while in office and even managed to survive impeachment for. And I was wrong. There was so much foot dragging throughout Biden's 4 years that it didn't happen. So I'm making that case right now. Build that case, because we'd be a foolish nation if we let that happen again come January 2029. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Thank you for listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. It's been a privilege filling in live from Chippewa Falls here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great day.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.